Okay. Actually, I start off with the three B's of a military presentation. And the three B's are be on time, be brief, and then be gone. that's how we sort of approach our, presentation. What I did was I actually made several slides here. Don't worry, I will not be going through all the data on these slides. What I did was I actually gave you a summation of some of the things that I've actually seen over the years, and I put them into a theoretical framework for you. So if you go to the first slide, this basically tells you a little bit about how the Earth is organized. We have the areas from tropical rainforest going to desert grasslands, and then we have the this one area where the forest is very, very dense, taiga, and then tundra. And what you're looking at is the distribution of zones, biomes, what types of animals live there, what types of things are grown there. These are the things that once you get an idea of what's in these zones, when someone calls you on the telephone and they're calling you from another country, if you know where the latitude and the longitude is, you'll have an idea of what kind of vegetation you're dealing with, what types of crops do they have in that area, what kind of weather pattern do they have, what time of the year is it. And also, if you go to the next slide, this tells you a little bit about the composition of the Earth. And I was really amazed that the crust is only 25 miles long. It was like a marathon down. this tells you a little bit about how the Earth is formed and over geological time. This is a time zone map. So if you were to stand in that circle, inside of the circle, it would be like you're on top of the North Pole looking down. And the clock is actually going around you. So Greenwich, England is at 12 noon. And unfortunately, in the Pacific Islands, 0 hour and 24 hours come in at the same time. So if you're living across the street from your cousin, you can't really tell what day they're going to meet you. This is one of the clocks that can actually tell you approximately what time is it in another country. So if you get into your mind a theoretical framework of where England is, of where the United States is, where Hawaii is, you can actually start telling what time zone the person is when they call and approximately what is going on in their particular biome once you get those biomes going. So it gives you just like a really quick look at what's going on in the area. Now, we're going to move on. This is the first of three slides. For some reason, the citations did not come on this slide, and there are two more that I will mention. But this is actually taken from Essentials of Environmental Health, the second edition. The person who actually wrote this book, Robert H. Frillis, this is one of the recommended books I have for you to read. It's the Essentials of Environmental Health, second edition again, by Frillis, F-R-L-I-S. Very, very good synopsis of environmental health, all the things that are coming up with global warming. How is the world changing? If you're practicing medicine, you're going into one region or another. We're starting to see all these different effects going on in the world. We just had a Cat 5 hit in Mexico for the first time in history. These things are happening around us constantly. So if we have a good idea of what's going on with that, we'll have a better place to be when we start to respond to things. This next slide is actually talking about population growth. And if you look at the numbers that are here, we had 1 billion people in the year 1830. There's 1 billion people after 25 million years. We've gone from 1 billion people in 1830, and in 1998, we had 6 billion. This is a geometric progression that is out of control as far as population growth. If you were going back to your days of bacteriology and you start looking at the petri dish and that experiment about whether we're overgrowing the amount of people that are able to be sustained by the Earth, we're 2.5 times the amount of people that the Earth can actually theoretically sustain. So we had the S-curve and the J-curves, Normally we sort of flatten out when we get to a certain point. And this is where we have what we call environmental resistance and the carrying capacity of the Earth. But we have actually broken through that line. Normally things will balance out and they'll get to a point where things are in equilibrium. But we have actually gone beyond the point of the carrying capacity of the Earth. What does this do? What is it? Why is it so important? Well, if you look at Pakistan about 10, 15 years ago, their population is about 271 million people. In order for any society to be sustained, there are about 19 critical infrastructure and key resource sectors that have to be maintained. Education, transportation, access to food, access to energy, electrical energy. These things are essential for people to actually thrive. So if we go back to Pakistan and we double that number to 271 and we go up to a level of 542, what will happen is this. They have to be able to increase the infrastructure twofold. That's like 100% increase in the infrastructure to stay where they are in the beginning. They have not done that. Their doubling time, 25 years. So what does that mean when you have a culture or a group of people who are in a setting of a city where you outstrip the government's ability to take care of people? You start having problems with the infrastructure. You start having problems with being able to control and to supply the necessary nutrients, education, energy that people are requiring. So you start breaking down the social fabric of government. So if we go on to the next, if we look at the left-hand side with children in the bottom and older adults, that is the pattern in most of the developed countries. The United States, Europe, we have a smaller number of children in the base and a larger number of people in the older populations. As time goes on, we're getting older and older. If you go to other countries and you look at it, it's the inverse. If you go to certain countries in Africa, in the Middle East, 60 to 70% of the population are people who are 15 years old or younger. Who's going to run society? Who's going to take care of all these children? Now are they vulnerable to other groups outside that want to use them for nefarious purposes? Sex trafficking, drug running, weapons running. Those groups are now becoming more and more vulnerable as time goes on. Also, who's going to give them the health care they need? 15 years old or younger, most of the people who are in these populations. And this is just a little bit about immigration. Immigration, this is how the population size gets gains or losses over time. Here's the population distribution. It's another representation, again, from the same book. This shows you what the male and female balance is as far as populations through age ranges. Here again, this is what happens with the ecological footprint. We are way over where we should be. We are actually, that blue dotted line is where we have 1.0. That's where we should be. And we are at way above. If we were able to bring sustainable life back down below, that was projection that we would try to hope to get there. If we keep going the same way we are going, we'll be over twice what we are able to sustain, what the Earth is able to sustain as far as human population. Now we have the dragon coming in. So in this problematic world we have, we have society, we have cults right now in China. We have places in Africa where industry is being utilized. Chemicals don't are not being regulated. Even here in the United States, we have problems with the regulation of chemicals. There's so many of them. Matter of fact, when we test the water out in Lake Michigan and other streams, by the way, the Great Lakes represents 95% of the fresh water in the country. It represents 25% of the fresh water in the world. Only one lake system is larger than that, and that's in Russia. That's the largest. So we are polluting our water, we're polluting our land, and one day we'll see the dragon come out of the water. So toxicology itself is involved in multiple fields, of course. Just some of them. The CDRNE is really, when I first joined the military, I was in medical school, and they said, well, you know, so you want to go to NDC. And I was like, NDC? And so they're going on television and that kind of thing. And they said, no, not exactly. It was nuclear, biological, and chemical warfare at that point. So this is chemical, biological, radiological, nuclear, and high-yield explosive. These things are also intermixed with our societal problems. So toxicology itself has some areas that we look at. We look at the ecosystem, reproductive toxicology, and the effects of on reproduction itself, teratogens. So there are multiple areas that we actually are getting involved in. Forensic toxicology, looking at the dumping of wastewaters, those kinds of things. I actually was in on a case with this when I was at IVPH, where there was a cleaner who just happened to dump all the chemicals into a water waste system. This is in Crestwood, Illinois. And when he did that, there was no way to regulate him. The water was actually admixed with regular drinking water as a cost-saving mechanism by the mayor. So the people in the area were extremely alarmed. And the actual amount that was in the water was very, very low. But the trust was eroded in the community. So it's very complex issues around toxicology, what kinds of chemicals are we using. Here are some of the categories that you have with chemical effects. I just left listening for you. You know, the additive, synergistic, antagonistic, potentiation, and correlative forces. Correlative forces, you have two chemicals that have no relationship to any kind of disease, but you put the two of them together, and they're able to produce harm or toxic effect. Potentiation, that's like asbestos and cigarette smoking. You know, you add the numbers and the synergistic effect of tobacco and asbestos crystalline fibers, you'll end up having three times the risk and seven times the risk separately. If you add that, that gets you 10, but the actual effect of the synergism is 80 times, of 80-fold increase. So we have all these chemicals, and one of the things that sort of amazed me was that when we have a school that has asbestos in it, we automatically go in and we close it down and we have our spacesuits out and go in and try to contain it and send everyone home. And then when we think we contain it, we come back and everything is great. But asbestos is also used as a flow agent for asphalt. So every time you go to a construction site downtown when they're digging things up, well, there may be a little bit of something else there that you don't know about. So toxicology is mixed with our society now. We are surrounded by it. It's chemical, cadmium from tires, lead from exhaust. These metals are in our environment. Now we're talking about urban gardening, and the question is, are we using safe soil? Are we planting things in areas that have been previously contaminated that will bioconcentrate these chemicals? So our environment is becoming one that we have to really be cautious about when we start looking at some of the effects of some of these chemicals that we're working with. Now, I always say the hand. The hand is really the thing that controls our behavior is manifested through. And the common portal for most of the disease that we see and the things that we contend with is actually through the mouth. Cigarette smoking, illegal drugs, overeating or eating the wrong food, poor nutrition, poisons, medication misuses, alcohol. So that mouth is actually the portal for much of what we encounter as far as treating disease. Those are the repercussions, some of them. But the leading causes of death can be actually linked to what we put through our mouth. This is a model that is from environmental and occupational health and safety. So in environmental and occupational health and safety, we can actually have certain controls that can put in place. Either we can have a chemical that's so dangerous that we have to eliminate it completely. This chemical, no one can come in contact with. It's so corrosive. Or we can actually substitute something else for it. So instead of chemical X, we use chemical Y. And chemical Y is actually not as bad as chemical X. It's still bad, but we can actually use it and still get by. Or we can contain it completely. We can have radiological materials in the hospital that we contain. The next level would be public health and administrative control. And you have the BEI, so biological exposure index. You have the threshold limit value, permissible exposure limits from OSHA, and the relative exposure limits from NIOSH. I'm going to tell you an easy way to remember that in the next slide. But what does the community do? And what can we do to design things to make sure that our environment is safer, so that we actually are engineering things so that the community can be built in a better way? Personal protective equipment can be used to try to shield yourself from some of these chemicals. A protective mask, gloves. We use that in the hospital setting all the time. Universal precaution. And then we can go down to perimeter controls where people can't gain access into an area. But once you have a breach of the system, then you are exposed to the agent. It's too late. Biological monitoring and surveillance then fall into place. And you have to actually watch the person. You may have to take serial samples or blood samples once a year or do screening of that person who's working with this particular chemical or particular agent that's harmful. And we can go also to primary, secondary, and tertiary prevention and try to look at taking care of the disease once it's manifested itself. But, of course, the ideal thing is prevention and not to incur the horrible cost and the pathology associated with not paying attention to these agents in the first place. I tell you, it's going to give you something easy to remember. It was Halloween last night, so one Halloween night studying for an exam, and not again, bat porn. The bat porn is really the breakdown of the ACGIH, BEI, and TLV, and then you also have the PEL from OSHA and the REL from NIOSH. So anyone taking a board, that might be a good thing to remember. The environmental carcinogens are of multiple types. One of the things that we have a problem with, especially with legislation, I can walk into the legislative office and say, in Chinatown, in Chicago, there's a serial prevalence rate of 10% of hepatitis B. We can eradicate this. All we need to do is go in and talk to people, get the community health workers together, vaccinate people. And they'll look at me and say, okay, great. So what's the repercussion of not doing it? Well, about one-third of the people who will contract hepatitis B will get maybe sick. Another third will have some mild symptoms. Another third maybe have nothing at all. But down the road, 20 years from now, they may develop hepatocellular carcinoma, a cancer of the liver. And they'll go like, okay, so looking at the smoking. And I was sitting there going like, why are they saying that? You know, it's obvious you can prevent this thing, right? It doesn't make sense. Why would you not want to prevent it? It's because it's not the legislative cycle. If they're going up for re-election, they want something that's going to make a big bang sometimes. And so if you're talking about something 20 to 30 years down the road, and I'm running for office next year, I'm looking for something that is going to be within my cycle. So it's really important to understand why, what motivates people to do things during cycle. It's not to say that they won't do it. It's just that you have to be aware of it and understand where its place is held. You may find someone there who actually had someone in the family who actually succumbed to it. And that often sometimes is a good way of going into a legislative cycle and being an advocate. So all of us should be advocates at some form or another for these issues. There are political considerations, of course, judicial, executive, and legislative, cultural issues, economic, and scientific. So it can be very, very difficult to actually look at these problems without understanding what kind of culture is it embedded in. One example, betel nuts in India. So chewing betel nuts can cause, major forms of oral cancer. It's been associated with cancer by chewing these nuts, but try to stop someone from eating them if it's a cultural practice that people believe in. It's just like trying to stop someone from smoking cigarettes. Very similar. Now, this is this is something for you to go through. It talks about the different types of environmental approaches, for environmental justice, precautionary principle, making sure that you do everything you can not to have the problem there in the first place. Environmental justice, making sure you go in and stop people from actually contaminating areas. Here, if you go down the road here to Englewood in Chicago, their rate of asthma is 6 times the national average. 6 times. If you drive down 55 and you're going towards south, and if you do it in the summertime, it can be unpleasant. You do it in the wintertime, and you go through a fog. You go through a fog. Things start to condense. You have multiple factories in that same area, right in that neighborhood. The wind pattern goes right through the neighborhood. The question is that the cause of this large increase in asthma in this population? How are the environmental factors affecting someone? People spend 8 hours sleeping, 8 hours working, and the other 8 hours, if they get to 8 hours, if they're not working 10 hours or 12 hours, they're in the workplace most of their life. So one of the things that's missing many times from the history or historical features of a person's history are what are they doing? What kind of work are they doing? How is that affecting their health? So it's important to pay attention to that. That equation on the bottom, R equals TVC. What that relates to is there are a couple of books I would recommend that you look at and read. One is called The Starfish and the Spider. And when I first saw that book, I said, what the heck are they giving us this book for? And it said, Starfish and the Spider. And I thought it was a kid's book. And I said, it was the first class. Maybe they're trying to get us warmed up. But one of the main themes in the book is that a spider, if you cut one leg off, it slows it down. You cut three legs off, it cripples it. You cut the head off, it dies. A starfish, if you cut an arm off, you come back later and you have two starfish. It's the difference between a hierarchical centralized system and a decentralized system. So as we go in time, the more that we are going, you're going to see things become more and more decentralized. It's like the internet. It's like library system. It's like the media. It's becoming more and more decentralized. So no one really actually has control over much of the mechanisms that it's operating under. So information, those kinds of things are affecting this equation. Risk equals threat. your threat that you're facing, times your vulnerabilities, times the consequences. It's one of the theoretical models we use for looking at any agent that is potentially a threat in a military setting or within an environment within a city. There's a very strong correlation between this and what's going on in the ideas of gun control with smart guns. It bridges many different categories within even the automotive industry. If you want to look at something, the risk was decreased in automobiles from the threat of being thrown forward in the car because your vulnerability was there because you were not restrained, and the consequences were death. So what did we do? We put a seatbelt in to decrease your vulnerability, and by doing that, it minimized your threat and the risk of having a bad consequence. So if you start using it as a model, it's actually incorporated in a lot of the things that we're theoretically posturing for homeland security and for health. This actually is just a little bit of a general model. It shows you the correlation between some of these issues on the side of politics, the value, the cost, the ethics. Those are other considerations you have to keep in mind anytime you're developing a model that you think it should be just scientific, just based on evidence. But when I went down to Katrina, I took about 600 soldiers down there, and we went to a home, and there was a man who was sitting in front of the home crying and crying. His wife was standing next to him, and she said, he's been sitting here for 2 days. And we said, really? Well, you know, why is he here? And she said, we just finished paying our house off, and there's a boat. And we said, well, we have to get out of here. We have to, you know, get you someplace else. And she said, no. She said, move his boat. You know, move his boat over. And his boat was on his side. And we were like, this sounds crazy. Well, you know, why would you do that? You need to get out of here. We went, and I said, okay, fine. We got a group together. We went, and we put the boat right side up. Right? Turns out this guy was a fisherman. Turning the boat over made him stop crying. He had hope again. There's a human dimension in the middle of all of this. If we ever lose track of that and don't understand that the human needs are going to be escalating just as much as their social needs, just as much as their needs for electricity and food, we have got to pay attention to that part of it and not just look only at the scientific data, but look at the value of it to the person and their cultural perspective on it. This is, again, the policy cycle, and you can go through that on your own. So in the TSCA, they call it TSCA, the Toxic Substance Control Act, there are 83,000 chemicals. I know it so far, and it grows every year. On the average, we have about 10,000 new chemicals coming out every year. When we stopped using asbestos, we went to man-made mineral fibers. We still don't know whether man-made mineral fibers are any better than asbestos. We haven't had the time to check it yet. So as we start substituting things with an environment and try to make it safer, we have to make sure that we understand its relationship to actually what's really going on. This is an EIA from the CDC, how they approach the environmental impact assessment. And the World Health Organization, some of their statements, that's a very good reference to you. And these are some of the current policies that other countries are using to look at whether we are actually helping to stop things from happening in the environment. I went down to Bolivia on the mission, and the gentleman sitting next to me was crying. And I said, what? I was like, is something wrong? You know, family or something like that? And he said, no. He said, this is the first time I've gone down to Bolivia in 10, 15 years.
And he said, last time I went down, it took us 3 hours to fly over the rainforest. He said, it's only been 45 minutes, it's gone. We are modifying, changing the world. And as we're doing that, we have to be very careful. I landed in Kelviak before I went to Iraq, Kelviak, Iceland. There are volcanoes there. Few years ago, remember the volcano went off and the airport shut down and it could not go over? One of the things that scared me when I found out about this is that Kelviak has a crater that's 4 times the size of what they referred to before as Krakatoa, East of Java. That's what all of them. That thing went off, right, in history in 1800. Guess what? Things 4 times larger, and the ice sheet that sits on top of these things, on top of the volcano, is a counterweight. Ice is non-compressible. Water is non-compressible. The only liquid that is non-compressible is water. If you take miles of ice off of the surface of the top of a volcano, it's going to advance faster. People are worried about these volcanoes and the activity that they're starting to see. Unless we start crossing these borders and start looking at it as a global problem, population explosion, pollution, poverty, having to take care of these children around the world, we are facing a very, very definite threat, greater than any other public health concern we've ever faced in history. This global view, we have got to develop, and we've got to do it fast. I was looking at Boko Haram. I did a study on them. Boko Haram is in Nigeria. Boko Haram is actually a group that is characterized as being terrorist. They are operating in northern Nigeria. Nigeria has a southern portion and a northern portion. The southern portion is mainly Christian. The northern portion is mainly Islamic. The northern portion is very, very poor, very rural. Again, the population, 60 to 70% of people are 16 years old or younger with no educational institution in place, no social control. You go down to southern Nigeria. In that region, wealth, so the income, the living is higher standard. And that's the seat of power and control. Guess where the army comes from? It comes from the north. It comes from the poor. So if you try to get a poor person who's a soldier to go after someone who's considered to be a terrorist, and that person happens to be their cousin, it's going to be very difficult to even force something like that. So it's a very complex cultural situation, but children are being picked off. They're being pulled into membership in notorious gangs. This disintegrates the stability of the world. Now you're seeing Lone Star, lone wolf actors coming out. Fox Sandpile, another book to read. BAK-S. It talks about self-organized criticality. We have systems that we have been developing. And actually, we have two components of these systems. These two components are combining to change simple situations into very complex situations. So we start building. We start making things. And box on sand pile, we start piling on sand. And at a certain point, a critical point, it breaks down. So we have skater systems in New York, controlling electricity. Only one switch went that threw New York and several other states into complete darkness. So as we're going forward, some of the theoretical models of, you know, looking at deterministic and probabilistic models, these things have to be incorporated into the work we're doing. We have to look at things in a new way, look at how to have public-private partnerships in order to get these things accomplished. We did it with seatbelts. We're getting on the road to doing it with guns. We need to do it with many more social ills that we have. Start reevaluating the battles we have and figure out how we can work together to address the three issues. I think these three P's are, you know, of paramount importance to actually work with and correct. The rest of this is just really some of the regulatory agencies for you. So you can actually go and look at the Clean Water Act, the Clean Air Act. Look at them online if you are interested in those areas. So multiple different areas, CERCLA and SARA, the APSDR is also very important. These are things that you sort of need to take a look at, understand what their relationship is, and there's some environmental advocacy groups. Have no stake in them, no getting benefits or any stock in them. But these organizations seem to be moving in a direction. So learn from them as physicians, because your patients and people that you're trying to help in a public health arena are being affected by the issues that they're talking about. And that's it. The questions page, actually, this is a picture of the rock. And it was one morning that we were there, and it was an ancient city, very, very ancient. But there were some amazing people. And we have got to get over this issue of whether we are connected in this earth, irrespective of gender, age, religion, race. We are all facing the same environmental and population-based threats. And it's time for everyone to get together and do something about it. And that's all.
Mm-hmm.